What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 44, and on this episode, we're going to be starting our five-part series on the five best foods to eat. We just finished a five-part series on the worst foods, so if you're interested in that, go ahead and check out some past episodes. But today, we're going to be talking about healthy fats and why you should include those in your diet. But first, let's do a check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
It's been pretty good. Had a lot of like social gatherings pretty much over the weekend. So drank a little bit of alcohol more than usual, but as far as like my diet was concerned, I still stayed on track, which was good. But at one of those events, I met a woman who's doing like cancer research for a children's hospital. And one thing that she noticed is all of the kids, like after they're in remission, like most of them start going obese. So I kind of told
her. Was she a nurse or like a scientist?
She's a researcher.
Like a scientist, like in the lab.
Yes. Okay. I didn't ask her how old she was, but she was about our age, maybe a little bit younger. So I told her my little theory on it. I was like, oh, well, so basically their mitochondria are damaged, extremely damaged when they have cancer. So instead of being able to convert, like, you know, create 30-something ATP, they're only able to create 2. So they're in a very, like, energy. What's the opposite of efficient? Like,
deficient.
There you go. basically they're at a very energy costly state.
Yeah.
And once they're healed, now all of a sudden they have 20 times the amount of energy. And most of that's coming from glucose, so there's going to be an insulin response with it. So basically their bodies think they're running a marathon every day to sitting on the couch. Pretty much from like a metabolic standpoint.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I told her. I was like, hey, this is probably what's going on. And she just looked at me like I said the world was flat. She had no idea what I was saying. I told her about the insulin response, told her about the Warburg effect. She's never heard of it. She's like, oh yeah, I know cancer cells use glucose. And I was like, yeah, they use glucose and glutamine. It's called the Warburg effect. And I like told her like a couple people to look up. Don't think she's going to do any of that. What she has them doing is wearing like a cheap Fitbit and like tracking their steps.
Like steps, yeah.
Okay, so these are cancer patients or now they're in remission.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have a lot of energy. I don't think these are the healthiest kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they were active beforehand. So I don't think there's probably any difference in the amount of activity that they're doing.
Yeah, it's not like steps are going to do that much anyways.
So I don't understand why that's what they're tracking. Because I'm pretty sure they're probably relatively sedentary, especially compared to like the rest of the kids their age.
So she's thinking they were moving, now they're not moving.
Yes.
That's the line she's drawing.
They're not moving enough.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And she said like, oh, well, they're not moving compared to other kids in their age group. And I was like, well, they probably weren't beforehand either.
And they probably feel like shit. They just had chemo or radiation.
Yeah. And I'm sure while they had cancer, like mm-hmm. we just talked about how they were at like a major caloric deficit, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, they're not going to be active at that standpoint. No. How could you be?
It's hard.
So yeah. I was just like, yeah, it has nothing to do with the calories or the activity. It has stuff to do with this.
Yeah.
And I don't know. She just looked at me like I was crazy. Like I was a crazy homeless guy yelling at the corner to myself.
Man, that bothers me. That really does. That's, I mean, not that this person's like crazy important, but the work she's doing is important.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She's in the majority.
Oh, she definitely thought, like, oh, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What is he, like, who does this guy think he is? Blah, blah, blah. I'm a cancer researcher, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, well, enjoy the rest of your night. Like, not going to talk to you anymore, but.
Jeez. I bet that was disappointing to you. You probably thought we could have a decent conversation initially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I didn't really kind of ease into it. I just like asked her what she's doing, and she told me, and I just kind of like went straight into it. I was like, oh, this is what's most likely going on.
Just started swinging bats.
And she was just like, no, that can't be it. And just kind of like, just like looked at me, nodded, and then like, I don't know, 2 minutes later, like, okay, that was it. Like, no conversation, no back and forth. I was like, all right, well, have fun with your worthless research.
I mean, because it's going to be.
Yeah.
It really is. I bet by the time she's our age, by the time she's done in this field, she's going to look back and be like, oh, those 20 years are for nothing. Yeah. Because she's looking for genes. Or if she's looking, why are these cancer kids not moving? You're not going to find answers there.
Yeah, her plan is we need to get these cancer patients running marathons or to join a soccer team when they're extremely compromised. I don't think that's the best scenario.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to work.
Man, that sucks.
Yeah, really, I mean, I don't really think that's what we should be pushing on. I mean, anybody that's coming off of that serious of a disease and then the treatment is just as bad as the disease.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they're done with that, oh, hey.
Hit the gym.
And not only hit the gym, the gym like twice as hard as other people
as your peers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you have to play catch up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so funny that what's going on with me is going to be in the same boat, but people who don't approach things from a like metabolic standpoint, whether it's cancer or literally like just body composition, it's weird. You know what I mean? Because it seems so obvious. But we're not in the majority.
Yeah. No, if it's not about calories, then you're wrong. Yeah. Everything's about calories. Everything's an energy balance. And hormones, I guess, don't exist. I was thinking about it. Are hormones too complicated for people to even want to study? Because they're complicated as shit. Like, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, they are complicated. And they're all intertwined and all that type of shit. And, yeah. I don't know, but it shouldn't be. That shouldn't be a good excuse. Oh, it's too complicated.
I mean, I don't know that much about hormones. I feel like I know maybe 2%. About what there is to know about
them. Yeah. I know a little bit.
Well, I just think it's such a complicated issue that I don't know if you're, like, really capable of knowing all there is to know about hormones. Because it's like, when one goes up, another goes down. When that one goes down, the other one goes up. They're just...
Mm-hmm.
It's such a big, like, effect, like a domino effect, that it's really just hard to know really what's going on.
Yeah. No, that's true. And, oh, man, his name's escaping. Who's the cancer guy again?
Seyfried?
Yeah. Seyfried knows enough about hormones to help cancer patients, at least.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's people out there who do know what's going on enough to help people. Does he know the whole picture? No, because no one does. But his treatments and his viewpoints are really helping people.
Well, he stumbled across, oh, hey, this works. Then he's like, oh, why is this working? Now he's, like, trying to piece together all the ways that it's helping.
Yeah, exactly.
And it sounds like he's about to... Damn it. What country is he going to be doing some studies in?
Is it Israel?
It might be Israel. I know it's not here.
No, it's not here. Yeah.
It's somewhere like the Middle East.
They're doing a lot of good work over there. Or Turkey?
I think it's Turkey.
Turkey or Israel.
Yeah, I think it's Turkey, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing a lot of good work over there. And it's so funny, our like American bias, like we hear like research in Turkey or like whatever, but they're ahead of the game over there.
Well, I know like Israel, they were using cannabis in hospitals since like the 70s.
They never stopped?
No. They had vaporizers in the hospital helping, like, cancer patients go through chemotherapy. Because, like, they realized, oh, hey, this helps with nausea. This helps...
They'll eat.
Yeah, with the appetite, with all those things. And so, like, yeah, we'll have vaporizers in the hospital. Now it's, like, going on since the 70s. And we're, like, just now, like... You know, maybe if you live in the right area...
You
maybe,
know the doctor
maybe
well.
Maybe we can prescribe it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I didn't know that. That's actually really cool. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. What were you talking about for your...
No, it's okay. Yeah.
God, I got sidetracked there.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as what's new with me, I mean, obviously, same old shit. My dog's Groundhog's Day. But I have been having a few, like, decent conversations with people about just, you know, nutrition and training and stuff. And it never fails. Like, when somebody hears what I do or just what I'm interested in as far as training or diet, they're always, like... I get flooded with questions. You know what I mean? Like a million questions, like a shotgun. Like, oh, what about this? What about this? And I actually love it. You know, this is something I'm really passionate about. I can talk about this stuff all day, every day. It's not a problem. But I had this incident pretty recently at work, and this young girl there, she's like in her mid-20s, she found out that I like know a little bit about training and that type of stuff, and I've helped people like get in shape. And she's like, oh, she thinks, you know, protein, like I'm like a protein guy, like get protein in, right? And to some extent, I am. I think a lot of people do not get enough protein. So I was like, well, how much do you weigh? She'll go about 130. And I said, all right, cool. I was like, well, if you really want to get your protein in, shoot for 130 every day. I think that's a real good baseline, right? If you can do that, you'll be all right, especially if you're working out, which she is. And so the other day, she's like, oh, you'd be proud of me. I got some protein in. And I was like, oh, okay, so what'd you have for breakfast? And she's like, oh, I had some yogurt and this, like, vegetable, like, fake meat patty thing, right? I assume it was, like, a Beyond Burger or something like that. Something made from, like, a pea protein.
And or I was like, soy.
Yeah, or some soy yeah. mix, right? Something like that. And I was like, oh. I'm like, no, not at all. And I was like, you don't like, I was like, you do not like beef? And she was like, no, I love beef. And I was like, well, go ahead and eat it. I was like, don't eat this like fake vegetable protein stuff. Like, that's not good for you. There's a million different products in it, and steak is perfectly fine. And I was like, and what about eggs? She's like, eating egg whites. I was like, eat the whole egg. No, there's too much fat in it. And I was like, you know, it's okay. You know what I mean? Like, you need to get your protein from whole animal sources. And she's like, but isn't meat bad for you? I was like, well, what about meat is bad for you? And she's like, oh, but they say, like, you know, the fat and like the saturated fat, and I know what she was going with, like causing heart disease and all that stuff, right? And I was just like, that's not true. And I kind of gave her a real brief explanation of the history behind it and all that type of stuff. It made me think about this week's podcast, because we're going to be talking about why people should have these healthy fats in their diet. I'm glad I had that experience, because it just reminded me that people are still afraid of fat. Like, fat has been dragged through the mud for, I don't know, 50 years. And like, that message has just been like, it's just ingrained in people nowadays that like, you have to lower fat. Like, she was like eating a bunch of carbs, barely getting the protein, and no fats. And I was like, you know, well, what you should do is cut your carbs, you know, a little bit, up your fat, and you'll be fine. And she just wasn't listening to me. So I was like, okay, so for this podcast, I'm going to look into the various countries that eat a lot of meat and like what's associated with that, right? Because if people still think meat is bad, mainly because of the saturated fat in the meat, like, we need to first tell people that saturated fat is not bad for you. So just to, I guess, start off, the whole fat is bad for you thing, and meat and saturated fat, all that stuff is bad for you, comes from a guy named Ansel Keys. And we've mentioned him a million times before. Definitely do not like that guy. And you might know him for the Keys ration. He's pretty much the guy who, like, in World War II, he developed the rations, like, pretty much what's the minimum amount of shit soldiers need to eat to survive, right? And for whatever reason, that gave him, like, a green light on everything nutrition. And I found out recently, do you know, well, first off, Ansel Keys is not a doctor, even though you'll see him in white coats everywhere. Do you know what he got his PhD in?
Was it nutrition?
Sure as shit wasn't. It was freshwater eels. He studied freshwater eels to get his PhD, and this is the guy we've listened to about nutrition for 50 years. I thought that was pretty funny. Freshwater eels. Like, how much of a nerd was this guy? And we're taking nutrition advice from this dude? Whatever, but pretty much...
So is that how he got his white coat? From studying eels?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I guess you need a white coat for that.
Yeah, I guess so. His theory was based off of seven countries, called the Seven Country Study, and it was honestly just a real shit epidemiological study that had its data manipulated like three ways from Sunday to make saturated fat look like the great killer of society.
Well, didn't he have, that was his hypothesis going into the study, before he even started the study, wasn't he already like on a mission to prove that saturated fat was like the devil, and just like, it's got to be linked to something, and he was just trying to find out how?
Oh yeah, no, he definitely had, he went into this test with the conclusion, and he made that data fit his conclusion. Which, by the way, is not how you do studies. That is the backwards way to do a study, right?
You're supposed to be trying to prove your hypothesis wrong. Not trying to prove it right.
Exactly.
It's pretty easy to prove something right.
But yeah, he just didn't add in any data that didn't go along with his, like, narrative. He didn't put into a study, like, the final form.
So did he only study 7 countries?
No, he studied way more countries. I think it was, what was it?
22.
It was over, yeah, 22. So
over 2/3 of the data that he collected didn't fit, so he just ignored it.
Didn't like put it in like a disclaimer at the end, or like, you know, a little sidebar, like, hey, this stuff didn't work. No, he just said it wasn't exist, didn't happen, and he drew a straight line with the amount of saturated fat people eat and the amount of heart attacks they have, saying the more saturated fat you eat, the more heart attacks you have. And that's never been true, but people just bought it. We've been paying that price ever since.
I really just don't understand how this Eagle researcher wrote the book on saturated fat and causing heart disease. I don't understand how that happened.
Oh, it's corruption through and through. It really is. Like, it was, God, I think it was in the early 60s. He presented his data to the AHA, which is the American Heart Association, and they laughed him out of the room. Even, like, this is, like, people knew back then that fat was perfectly okay. But 4 years later, there was no new data. There was no new study. They changed the whole guidelines and damned saturated fat. The only thing that changed is Ansel Keys was now on the board of the AHA, and he had money going into the AHA. He pretty much was like a fundraiser type of guy and got money into their pockets. And so the initial startup for saturated fat being damned is pretty much just corruption.
So it sounds like the right lobbyists heard him. It's like, hey, yes, I like this, where this guy's going.
Yep.
And so they put him in charge.
Because if you follow that logic, if saturated fat is bad, that means we can feed them this shit grains and nuts and seeds and make a ton of money off it. And that's exactly what happened. So the thing with fat, right, or with saturated fat is, if saturated fat associated with meat is bad for you and will lead to heart disease, it makes sense to look at the countries with the highest meat intake and see what their average lifespans are. That seems like a pretty logical thing to look into, right?
Well, that seems like where he was going with his study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Even though he didn't. I mean, because if meat causes heart disease, then these countries with the highest meat consumption should be dropping like flies and have a pretty low life expectancy. So the country with the highest meat consumption in the world is Hong Kong. And they eat an average of about 700 grams a day. That's about 1.5 pounds. And I added this in here just because people are going to say, oh, it's just salmon. For whatever reason, people think fish isn't meat. Do you get that a lot?
It's like, if you're vegetarian, then it's like, well, do you eat eggs? And then the next question do you eat fish?
Yeah. For whatever reason, people don't think fish is meat. But guess what? It's just fat and protein like a steak, okay? But it's not just fish. Like, people in Hong Kong eat everything. They are 3rd in the world in per capita beef consumption and 4th in the world in pork consumption. So they eat a shit ton of pork and a shit ton of beef, along with fish as well. And guess what country has the world's longest life expectancy?
I'm guessing Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, at 84 years.
And it's not like smog isn't an issue over there.
No, there's way more stuff going on, yeah.
They have a lot of environmental factors that should be like bringing that lower.
And it's not.
So if they're eating this much meat, and meat is supposed to, or saturated fat is supposed to be bad for you, and they're breathing in a shit ton of crap air, they should be dropping in their 60s.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, what's our life expectancy in the 70s? We're 70-something?
I think we're in the 70s.
I think we're like, I know we're dropping.
We are dropping, yeah. But we're definitely above this next country. So I was like, okay, so the country that eats the most meat lives forever. And if this saturated fat ate meat is bad, like, these people should be dying, and they're not. It's the exact opposite. So I was like, all right, let's look into a country that doesn't eat a lot of meat. And obviously, India is a huge country, and it's mainly a vegetarian nation. Well, guess what? They have the 2nd lowest per capita meat consumption in the world, yet they suffer from heart disease at an alarming rate. It accounted for 32% of all deaths from 2010 to 2013. In America, and we know how fat and out of shape we are, that number was 23%. So almost 10% more in India.
I can't believe somebody's that much worse than us.
Way worse than us. Their life expectancy in India is 68 years.
Damn.
And I get it. There's other factors going into it. Poverty, access to whatever, clean water. But if meat was that bad, India should be thriving because they don't eat meat. So that's just the meat I looked at. Okay, so what about just saturated fat in general, right? Like, what countries eat the most saturated fat? France has the highest consumption of saturated fat in the world, and the lowest rates of heart disease.
Yeah, that was known as the French paradox. And they tried to come up with like the Mediterranean diet, which is our version of a Mediterranean diet because there is no real Mediterranean diet.
Definitely not.
Each one of those Mediterranean countries eats their own way.
Each one of those Mediterranean towns eats their own way. Like, it's super diverse over there.
Yeah, so, like, the whole Mediterranean diet is, I don't know, somebody's invention, and it sounded good.
Hey. And they're making a lot of money off it.
Yeah.
They are. Those cookbooks that say Mediterranean on it sell. So,
isn't that where, like, the whole olive oil with its polyphenols is keeping us alive forever?
100%. Which, yeah, that's why people dip bread in olive oil now. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's crazy. So, yeah, just to reemphasize that, France eats the most saturated fat, and they have the lowest rates of heart disease. Okay, all right, well, whatever. See, look at another country. Switzerland has the second highest consumption of saturated fat in the world. What do you think their rates of heart disease are?
It's got to be, what, probably the worst in the world?
Right, the second lowest. Do we see a trend here? The more saturated fat, the stronger their hearts, the more protected their hearts are from heart disease. And what do we say a lot about epidemiological studies and, like, association and causation and stuff like that?
Yeah, so correlation doesn't prove causation. I mean, that's basically just, oh, hey, we see this correlation. Now we need to test this hypothesis further, which is all they ever got with this 7-country study. Mm-hmm. They were never able to take it to the next step. But if there is no correlation, then there is no causation.
Right? You can disprove it. Yeah. Now, proving it's a whole different thing, and that requires way more tests. But these tests did disprove the fact that there is no link between saturated fat and heart disease. It's just not.
Yeah, because if you just use the correlation and causation, it's like owning a TV is correlated with heart disease. Cell phones correlated with heart disease.
Yeah, I mean, putting your left shoe on first is coordinated with heart disease.
You know, like all these just advances in technology, everything that we have more of now. I mean, I guess like owning a pager would be a reverse correlation with heart disease because nobody owns a pager anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, so
getting, and they would recommend us all go get pagers.
I mean, that's the type of study that they're doing.
Yeah, that's the logic behind those studies. Yeah. So what's really associated with heart disease? It's carbohydrates. And there's a couple huge studies I pulled that show that. So a study of 42 European nations concluded that the most significant dietary correlate of low cardiovascular disease risk was high total fat and animal protein consumption. So pretty much what that means is the people that ate the most meat had the lowest odds of developing cardiovascular disease. And this study also said the major correlate of high cardiovascular disease risk was the proportion of energy from carbohydrates and alcohol or from potato and cereal carbohydrates. I hate the way they word that, but pretty much they're saying carbs. The more carbs these people ate, the higher their chances of getting heart disease.
Well, that's strange that they use potato and cereal in the same like sentence, because like one is extremely refined carbohydrates, the other one's a pretty natural source.
And alcohol threw it off too. But yeah, that's what they're trying to say. But like the main thing like with saturated fat, it's like, but saturated fat raises cholesterol, right? Like, yeah, sure does. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. From this study, they said, the study found that animal fat did indeed raise cholesterol levels, but that relationship between raised cholesterol and cardiovascular disease indicators in the present study is always negative. The higher the cholesterol, the lower the cardiovascular disease rates. Now that is completely opposite of what most people have been told.
Oh, say that to a cardiologist, and he's going to slap you in the face.
Like, he'll act like that girl at that party. They're like, you're crazy, turn around and leave.
Yeah. Meanwhile, heart disease has been the number one killer in our country for about a century now.
Yeah, and guess what we're eating less of? Saturated fat.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And honestly, the new hot study, like, and at least in our, like, our little world, it's called a PURE study, and it's a huge study. So it looked at over 130,000 people in 18 countries, and they concluded that the more saturated fat people ate, the lower their rates of cardiovascular disease and the lower their total mortality. The more carbohydrates they ate, the higher their rates of cardiovascular disease and total mortality. Boom. Like, it can't get pretty much more decisive than that. Like, these are huge studies with crazy amount of people pretty much saying that the recommendations to watch fat because of cholesterol is just complete bullshit, and a healthy diet contains healthy fats, 100%.
Yeah, and you know the most upsetting part about this is if you have high cholesterol and they give you a statin drug, statin drugs inhibit your body's ability to create its own CoQ10. And not only are you no longer able to produce your own CoQ10, but they're also telling you to remove the dietary sources that you'd be getting that CoQ10. So don't eat red meat, which means don't eat heart. So you're not getting any of this CoQ10 through your diet.
Nope.
So you're going to have no CoQ10.
No, and if you want to, CoQ10 is such a vital nutrient. We have a whole podcast on it because that's the type of dive it deserved. It's such a vital thing. So statins are a legit criminal. Like, I think they should be. Sure. Yeah, like, it's a scam, man. People are getting worked that are taking statins. And they're so common, man. They're just making a ton of money hand over fist.
And not everybody's, like, recommending, hey, take this CoQ10 supplement.
No.
Like, my mom's been on statin drugs. I've been trying to get her off of them. But I had to tell her, I was like, okay, fine. You're going to continue taking
this. At least do this.
Take these CoQ10s. And not only take these CoQ10s, take the ubiquinol, mm-hmm. like, in the right type of form, too.
Yep.
So it's not only about taking a supplement, which you should not need to do to be healthy.
No, you shouldn't.
I mean, like, if you're looking for a performance boost, something along those lines, or you have a genetic disorder.
Yeah, but a basic life? No.
Yeah, you should not need a supplement. And then on top of that, like, it has to be in the right form.
Yep.
And it's like,
yeah, it's ubiquinol, so N-O-L at the end, not ubiquinone. And look for one that's water-soluble and fat-soluble, so you'll find like kind of like a hybrid blend in there. And that's usually the one that's best absorbed. But again, like, yeah, if you want more information, check out that article or our podcast on CoQ10. But like I said, like, there's a difference between unhealthy fats and healthy fats. And we did a whole podcast on industrial seed oils, so things like canola, soy, corn, sunflower oil, peanut oil. Things like that would be considered a bad fat. But the fats we're going to talk about today come from nature. And guess what? Nature doesn't make bad fats. This shit that we get naturally is all good for us. But first, before we get into that, let's have a little ad from me. Then we'll get back to the topic. TNT, wellnessandnutrition.com, whole food nutrition rediscovered. If you are struggling looking to improve your health or optimize your lifestyle, you can sign up for a custom meal plan on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com. Back to today's topic.
We talked about all the bad fats to be cooking with in the very first podcast on the five worst foods. So we're going to start talking about the good fats that you can cook with. So first we're going to talk about smoking points. That's the point where like the fat is continuously smoking, so you don't want to cook it to this level. But there's a little bit more nuance to that. So the highest oil that with a smoking point is avocado oil, actually refined avocado oil at 520 degrees. These are all in Fahrenheit. Next is ghee at 485, olive oils 375, lard 370, coconut oil 360, avocado oil 360, tallow 350, butter is down at 250. So pretty much 350 is what it's going to be for like most typical oils, like from natural sources. So refined canola oil is up at 475. So if refined canola oil is at 475, but unrefined canola oil is at 225, it's a 250 degree difference. What's going on there? Well, the reason that you can cook that refined canola oil at such a high temperature is because everything in there has already been oxidized through chemical processes.
It's already shit.
Yeah, it's already poison, so you cooking something at that high temperature isn't going to do the damage because it's already been done. It's already been exposed to those high heats through the refining process. And that's the same thing with the refined avocado oil. So yes, refined avocado oil does have a crazy high smoking point, but that's not a good thing.
Yeah, what did you tell me about where they get the oil for refined avocado oil?
So since it's refined, like it has, the taste is removed from it. So, and like a lot of the beneficial ingredients in it, like the polyphenols, that type of thing, are already removed. So it doesn't really matter. They can use rotten avocados.
So like old nasty shit that no one would eat because it would be nasty, they can just turn that into the oils.
Yeah, and that's what they're doing with that.
I mean, it makes sense. At least they're recycling something.
I mean, I would still bet it's probably better than canola oil.
Yeah.
But I mean, how much better? I don't really know.
Yeah, no, me either. Yeah.
And this is like a side note, when it comes to avocado oil and like olive oil, is you want to buy these in a glass bottle and preferably a dark glass bottle. You don't want to really be buying anything in plastic because you're going to get some plastic along with it. but you don't want it to be in a clear bottle or jar, because light is going to go through that and it'll oxidize it. So you want something dark so the light can't penetrate it and oxidize it, and you want something glass so you're not getting plastics along with it. I mean, that's true for all the oils, but especially the avocado and the olive oil, because those have omega-6s and those are more prone to oxidation than the rest.
Yeah, and like when we mentioned this, the industrial seed oil, it's not like the olive oil is going to oxidize and you're going to like open the top and smoke's going to come out. It's going to oxidize and you're not even going to notice. We literally don't have taste buds for oxidized omega-6 fats. Like, it just won't taste bad to us. So you can be having this shit oil and not even know it.
Yeah, honestly, when it comes to like olive oil and avocado oil, I think it's better just to be safe with those and use those as like a salad dressing or as like a dipping, something you're going to
use. Yeah, you can eat those cold. Yeah.
Yeah, use them as a cold source. And those do have pretty good flavor with them.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, the polyphenols in there do add quite a bit of flavor. As long as if there's no polyphenols in there, that means they're already refined and they're trash.
Mm-hmm.
Also with olive oil in our country, you got to be kind of careful with the sourcing on it, because a lot of them are cut with canola or soybean oil.
That's true. Yeah, and that's sad. And that's really hard to discover, right? Because they hide that stuff. So
it kills me is, like, olive oil is really popular, like, in California. I see it on all the farmers markets. And I'm like, maybe I should try some of these. Mm. But they're always, like, $20, $30 for a little bottle. And it's always in a clear bottle.
It's not worth it.
I'm just like, well, I can't buy this. I mean, like, we're at the farmer's market. It's 100 degrees outside. This shit's in direct sunlight. It's getting oxidized right here.
Yeah, exactly. And how long has it been in this bottle? Like, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of just unknowns with it.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I don't know if we actually laid down the fats we recommend. So as far as, just to start off, the healthy fats, the one Tom's right over, like the smoking points, just to make it more clear, like good things to use and that are part of a healthy diet would be lard, which is just pork fat, ghee, which is pretty much like boiled down butter, tallow, which is beef fat, butter, avocado oil, coconut oil, or olive oil. All those fats serve a pretty good purpose for various different types of cooking. So if you're looking for healthy oils, choose one of those.
Yeah, and since ghee has the highest smoking point, if you're going to cook something at a very high temperature, ghee is your best bet. Other than that, lard, coconut oil, tallow, those are all about the same. Butter's a little bit lower.
And honestly, if you never ate ghee like straight from the tube or jar or whatever you have in, I recommend it. Do you ever do that?
It's too expensive.
Oh, you know, I've definitely done it. It's delicious. It tastes like caramel to me. Like, something about ghee is delicious. I don't use it that much, honestly, because most of the meat I just cook in their own fat, but it tastes really good. But one of the major benefits of including high fat in your diet, like, besides all the hormonal effects of, like, low insulin and allowing your body to tap into body fat stores so you can just get leaner naturally, is that we have to ingest fat in order to help our body absorb fat-soluble vitamins. And that's something we're going to go over, is like all the different vitamins you're going to find in these natural fat sources.
So vitamin A was discovered in 1906. Was this the first vitamin discovered?
Yeah, that's why it's called vitamin A.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So normally when you hear vitamin A, you think of...
And hold on, by the way, that's not that long ago.
Oh, no, not at all.
Like, you talked, like, of course, any sort of ancient society, but even in the 1800s, people were not RDAs on vitamins. Like, no one was worried about that shit, and they were living okay.
Well, didn't they discover vitamins through livestock, through, like, deficiencies in livestock?
I just read how they discovered vitamin A, but I can't remember.
This is kind of going back to, like, a book that I read, like, two or three books ago.
Uh-huh.
It was, like, something like, oh, hey, this vitamin is deficient in this diet. And, like, vitamin, like, vital. Like, oh, they realize, oh, hey, they need
this. It's important.
They need this component to live.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of, like, how they came up with the name and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
That was a sidebar that was very, like, unofficial, not very educational.
You're like, don't Google it. Yeah.
So, like, all right, vitamin A, pretty much it gives stuff an orange color to it. So think of, like, pasteurized butter. It should be yellow. If you're using real butter, it should have a yellow tinge to it. If you're using just like store-bought, just conventional butter, it's white. That's because there's not that much vitamin A in it.
Yeah.
That's a little difference. And it's the same with egg yolks. Like a heritage breed egg, dark orange. A normal like conventional factory farmed egg, like pretty much bright yellow. Like there's a big color contrast. Yeah, it's a vitamin A. So if you think of like orange vegetables, like carrots, those have vitamin A, but they don't. They actually have beta carotene, which is a precursor to vitamin A. Our body has to convert it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really do it very effectively. It's like at 9 to 22%, and that relies on a bunch of different factors. Mostly how much dietary fat is in the small intestine at that time, because it's a fat-soluble vitamin.
Exactly. And how many people, especially nowadays, are eating that much saturated fat with their meals?
None, really.
None, especially in a shit like carrots, you know what I mean?
Yeah, honestly, I don't think of pairing carrots with butter.
No.
I mean, one thing I definitely noticed when I first went keto is how delicious broccoli tasted when I, like, drowned it in butter. Mm. And, like, how much better pretty much every single vegetable I've ever had tastes so much better when you drown it in butter or some other sort of fat.
Yep.
I didn't really realize, like, oh, hey, vegetables can taste good.
Yeah, they can. Yeah.
So, yeah, you're converting it to vitamin A at a very low rate. So the label on those, a little bit deceiving.
Yeah, no, it's very misleading. If you really want to get real vitamin A, which is called retinol, you have to get that from animal sources. Like, that's just the only place you're going to get it.
And so the name retinol, that sounds very similar to retina, and that's because it's very good for your eyes. That's the most important thing it's for, is for eyesight. Helps with light sensitivity, pretty much just overall eye health. So if you overdo it, which you can overdose on any fat-soluble vitamin because you'll store it in your fat, it's very difficult to do from just eating a natural diet. Like, you have to do supplementation, maybe some injections, something crazy unnatural process.
Yeah.
You're not going to overdose on vitamin A just from eating butter, just from putting butter in your coffee and having a little bit of butter. I mean, maybe if you're snacking on butter sticks all day, every day, you might be able to.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, you probably die of obesity first.
Again, that's not a very natural thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So if you are, like, overdosing on it, you'll be sensitive to light, and that's just because your retina are going to be letting in too much light. So you're going to be getting headaches, be nauseous, you're going to lose a little bit of eyesight, and then, like, jaundice, so, like, yellowing skin. You'll have so much of that vitamin A, that orange vitamin, that your skin's going to be orange.
Literally, yeah. And the way you can tell, I mean, if this happens to you, good luck. You probably have bigger problems in your life, but your skin will get yellow, but your eyes won't get yellow. So you'll realize, okay, if your liver is going to shit and you get jaundice, your eyes will go yellow too. And if you've ever seen anyone with failing liver, you know what I'm talking about. It looks like their eyes are made of, like, highlighter. But if you're having too much vitamin A, it'll just be your skin. And so, like, a deficiency in vitamin A will affect your night vision. And like we said, vitamin A is super important for eye health. And I was like, all right, so what's really going on with night vision? So normally, in a dimly lit room, you eventually become more sensitive to light. This is because the eye's sensitivity to light depends on the amount of a substance in the retinol called, or retina, excuse me, called rhodopsin. And this is also known as visual purple. So in high light conditions, it's bleached out, it's washed out. So you're just walking around throughout the day, and like during daylight, there's no rhodopsin there. But in low light, it regenerates, leading to an increased light sensitivity. And the manufacturing of this visual purple needs vitamin A. Therefore, a reduction in vitamin A will lead to a reduction in rhodopsin, and that affects your body's ability to adapt to dimly lit surroundings. So if you're walking around like a movie theater, and like after you've been in for 20 minutes, if it's still dark as shit, like you can't even see your neighbor, like your eyes haven't adapted that quick, maybe vitamin A can be something you need to look into.
Yeah, so the benefits of vitamin A are eye health. It's a potent antioxidant. Pretty much every single vitamin is going to be a potent antioxidant.
Yeah.
And it's also great for your immune system. It's a building blocks for B and T cells, which are your basically your attack cells for when you have a foreign invader. So the RDA of vitamin A is 4,000 international units for women, 5,000 for men. I mean, these are general guidelines. So somewhere around there. I mean, it's all going to depend on how big you are, mostly. So 4,000 to 7,000. I mean, most Americans are bigger than the averages.
Yeah. And also depends. I mean, I'm just thinking of this now, and it is a topic of conversation I want to have, maybe obviously on a whole nother podcast, but just RDAs in general are almost, they're case-specific on the diet you have. So they very widely depend on, because like my recommendations with my diet, being a bigger guy, eating all meat, is going to be way different than a girl let's say, 120-pound girl eating the standard American diet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I know with vitamin C, it's the case that if you're on a high-carb diet, you need more vitamin C.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to be like that for every vitamin. I think it's definitely plausible.
Yeah, I think it's going to affect everything in some way more than others, but I think it's going to be different for sure. But
and where they're coming up with these, they're testing these on people that are on a high carb diet. They're not testing these on ketogenic people.
Definitely not. Yeah. So these are measurements of just one tablespoon. So fats that are high in vitamin A. The big ones are going to be the dairy products. So butter has about 355 international units, and ghee has about 300 international units per tablespoon, which is pretty good. And all the other oils like avocado, coconut, olive, lard, and tallow are all pretty low in vitamin A.
Yeah, so one tablespoon's pretty much nothing. When I was doing butter in my coffee, I was doing 2 tablespoons. I'd have another 2 tablespoons of butter with, like, dinner. Mm-hmm. So I was already getting, you know, 4 tablespoons of that right there, which is pretty close to the recommendation. And then on top of, like, what you're getting through your food.
Well, you're going to get some in your diet just from what you eat, yeah. But this is a good source of it, 100%.
So the next one, we're just going to do these vitamins in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
So vitamin D. So that helps with calcium and phosphorus. Really, it helps with, promotes your bone health. That's where most people think of vitamin D. You need vitamin D to get strong bones. And it helps that by sparing calcium. So if you're able to absorb more calcium, you're not going to be pulling that from your bones. So you're not going to be weakening your bones.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, low vitamin D is linked to depression.
So yeah.
You can get vitamin D through the sun. I mean, that's the best way to do it. It only takes 20 to 30 minutes a day. That's all that's really needed. And that's to prevent depression.
People assume, like, when you say, like, oh, get out and get some sun, that they need to go out in the sun for, like, 5 hours. It's like our skin is pretty good at turning sunlight into vitamin D.
Well, also, it kind of depends on your skin color.
Well, I turn sunlight into vitamin D better than anybody.
So how much melanin you have? I'm kind of wondering, are those 20 to 30 minutes, is that for white people?
I don't know, maybe.
Because, I mean, that's definitely a major factor. That's why there are different colors of the skin, is like how much sunlight you were exposed to, or how much sunlight your ancestors were exposed to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, my ancestors up in wherever, Scotland, sun wasn't around too often, so our skin had to be lighter so we can absorb the limited amount of sun that was there year-round. But, like, obviously in Africa, where it's hot as shit a lot of the time, they could have darker pigments, so they wouldn't absorb that much vitamin D. Because they were just, if they were walking around like me, I mean, one, they get sunburn, of course, but they'd be swimming in vitamin D way too much more than they ever needed. I want to talk about a little bit about just the type of vitamin D if you are looking to supplement. So the vitamin D produced by the skin by the action of ultraviolet rays is called D3, and I'll try and pronounce this shit, cholecalciferol. So if you see anything, you want like an active form of D3, go for that one. There's another form called D2, which is ergocalciferol. And this is a less bioavailable form. And honestly, that's the form you're usually going to find in supplements. Because obviously, supplement companies are trying to cut corners and put in the cheaper product, but still label it as vitamin D. So you want to look for D3. And just vitamin D in general, is technically a hormone. Because it's made in our one organ, our skin, and it acts on other organs like our gut and our bones. So that's what hormones do. So vitamin D is kind of a unique case. It's vitamin and a hormone.
So the only time you'd really need to supplement with vitamin D is if you're either somebody who works graveyard, so you're never getting sunlight exposure, or if you live somewhere like Alaska or Canada, where it's all of a sudden nighttime for like a month out of the year, and you're just sunlight exposure just isn't an option for you.
Yeah.
So that's when you should be supplementing with vitamin D. Other than that, go for a walk in the sun.
Oh, for sure. But, you know, actually just thinking about it, somebody at work the other day, heavyset guy, he's has gout, like, he's definitely diabetic, he just doesn't know it yet. He went to the doctor and he said he's very low in vitamin D. And he said, oh yeah, my doctor, I think it was 5,000 international unit pills. I was like, okay. I was like, why don't you just, like, go outside? And the dude's dark skin. I was like, just go outside for, like, an hour, you'll be fine. And he was like, no. Or rather just take this pill. That's the world, you know?
I mean, I can't believe how... I mean, I guess I get that. All right, if that doctor gave the advice of go for a 10-minute walk outside in the sun, do you think he would take that as, like, a good option?
No. Probably not.
I just wonder, like, if doctors are just like, hey, take this pill because it's the easy way out, instead of just saying, you know, go for a walk in the sun.
Yeah, I mean, but how many doctors, well, shit, I don't know, tell people to get, like, exercise and they don't, you know?
But if you hear from a doctor, oh, hey, this pill is the same thing as getting sunlight, then I'm just going to take the pill because it's easier. But yeah. if you're told by an authority figure that doing this is way better for your health, like, I think you'd be more likely to do that.
To buy in. Yeah, no, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. So fats that are high in vitamin D, again, this is per tablespoon, are lard. Lard is actually the highest source of vitamin D out of all these fats. And so it's about 15 international units per tablespoon. Butter's good as well at 9. Tallow has 4. Ghee is 2. Again, the international units. Avocado, coconut, olive oils all have 0. And if you think about that, just logically, it makes sense. Like pigs, us and pigs are very similar metabolically. And they're out in the sun all day. And their skin does the exact same thing. It converts sunlight into vitamin D, and they store vitamin D's fat soluble. They store it in their fat. Pig fat is lard, so it makes sense that lard would be high in vitamin D.
Well, and that pink skin makes it look like they would absorb a lot more sun rays than a cow that's covered in fur.
Yeah, and black spots.
Yeah, so I mean, that's probably what's going on there.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like, you don't really need to be getting a lot of this through your nutrition if you can just go on a damn walk outside.
I'm telling you, man, it's a big ask for people these days.
Yeah. I understand. Who wants to go outside when they could just stay inside and watch Netflix all day?
Yeah, I know, right?
So the next one in alphabetical order would be vitamin E. And this one is, they're doing a lot of, like, research on it. There's a lot of crazy claims about vitamin E, how it might be the cure to cancer, clears up all these skin diseases. I don't, like, there's so much emerging science with all that, I can't really believe all those claims. It seems like there's potential there, but I don't think we understand it anywhere near enough for all those claims to be true.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I was, to do research for this podcast, actually, I didn't even tell you this, I have this nutritional encyclopedia, the John Yudkin Nutritional Encyclopedia. It's an old book from, like, the 70s, and it was actually super... You don't appreciate the internet until you start going through old books and going through, like, the glossary, like, in the back and, like, trying to go, like, it was literally hurting my hands. Like, I felt like a baby. I was like, why can't I just click and it just, like, comes up? Yeah. Like, I had to constantly go back and forth. But even back then, so in the 70s, he said, you know, they're doing a lot of research on vitamin E, but a lot of the research isn't coming out conclusive. Like, it's just these huge claims that, you know, it helps the wrinkles and it helps with, like, extending life just aren't coming to fruition. So... Like Tom said, maybe there is potential there, but making these huge claims, I don't think it's too early.
Yeah, and again, like, it's a potent antioxidant, so that's probably where all the benefits are coming from. Antioxidants are good for your skin. Antioxidants are good for preventing heart disease. Like, antioxidants in general are good for a lot of different things. They clear up free radicals. So from that standpoint, I understand it. But I mean, for vitamin E to be the only one source, like, I don't know about that.
Yeah. So the RDA is pretty low for vitamin E. It's only 15 international units. And I don't think there's ever been a case of vitamin E deficiency.
I mean, there probably has been, and we don't understand it enough.
It wasn't diagnosed.
Yeah. I've never really heard of it. So the highest ones are olive oil and avocado oil, and that's 2 international units per tablespoon. And again, like, if you're consuming these fats, you're consuming more than one tablespoon.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty much it for vitamin E.
Yeah, vitamin E is pretty short. You know, there's not a lot to go off there, but you're not going to get any, pretty much none in butter, ghee, coconut oil, lard, or tallow. So it's not going to be a good source of vitamin E, but you're going to be getting vitamin E in your diet from other foods, of course. Like, you're not going to live off of, you know, beef tallow.
So you know how I think it was last week or maybe it was a week before, we talked about how if this is what you study... Everything is related to this. I think it was revolving around, like, the anti-nutrients.
Yeah, I was talking about the oxalate lady and the goitrogen lady. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember listening to a podcast on vitamin E, like, from a vitamin E researcher. And he was just going into, oh, vitamin E can prevent cancer. Mm-hmm. Clear up skin. It'll just, like, it'll do all these things. Like, it's the miracle drug that nobody knows about, nobody's talking about.
Yep.
I'm just like, I mean, I get that. Mm-hmm. That, like, hey, you want your research to mean something. But it doesn't really, like, stack up like that quite yet.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, it really doesn't. And that's just, we see that everywhere. People who are focused in these little bubbles, they think their bubble is the most important bubble. They just do.
If it makes like a 1% improvement, oh, it's a miracle drug.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, I get it. If I was spending 7 hours a day studying something, I'd want that shit to be worth it.
Yeah, if you got your PhD in this shit, you know what I mean? Or your doctorate or whatever, yeah, of course.
All right, so the last vitamin we're going to talk about is vitamin K. So there's two types of vitamin K. There's K1 and then there's K2. At least they keep these names pretty simple.
Yeah, thank God.
K1 comes from plants, and there is no clear evidence that these are beneficial. So kale, pretty much spinach, all those like green leafy vegetables that are high in vitamin K, they could be beneficial, but I don't know that. They also could be worthless.
Yeah, exactly. And if you see a trend here, remember it was the same thing damn near for vitamin A. Like the type of vitamin A you get in plants is really not the vitamin A we need. So the vitamin K you get in plants is really not the vitamin K we need. We need a different type of vitamin K.
Well, at least with vitamin A, I saw studies that said that you can convert it. I didn't see anything that said, like, oh, we convert K1 to K2 at this rate. Like, I looked, and I just didn't see anything.
Didn't see nothing, yeah.
And most of the websites I'm looking from aren't, I don't look at carnivore-based stuff.
They're not skewed that way?
No, I try not to. Yeah, so I was, like, looking at, like, Healthline, PubMed, like, those type of websites, and I didn't really see anything come across that. So what K2 does in the body is it helps your body metabolize calcium. So similar to vitamin D. So it helps you with calcium. So that's great for your bone health, your teeth health, and it also lowers the risk of heart attack. Because if you have too much calcium in your body, you're at risk of not a myocardial infarction. What's the opposite?
Myocardial infarction? What are you saying?
What's the opposite of cardiac arrest? That's what I'm thinking of. It lowers the risk of cardiac arrest.
But yeah, vitamin K and vitamin D, when they're paired together, they kind of tell the body what to do with calcium. So the calcium in the blood, if you don't have these vitamins in the proper amount, can kind of diffuse into the soft tissues around the heart and cause calcification of the arteries. And so that just makes the arteries stiff and not pliable. Pliable? It's not a word. What's the
pliable?
Word? Like pliable. Not pliable, which you want them to be. Like, you want them, like, the aorta of a young person, you can blow up like a balloon. Like, it's very flexible. But as we age, things get more and more calcified. It's almost as tarred and, like, tight as a pipe. And that's not a good thing. You know, we want to prevent that as much as possible. And that's why vitamin K and vitamin D are so important as far as telling our body what to do with calcium. RDA for vitamin K is actually pretty low. So it's just 90 micrograms for women and 120 micrograms for men, which is damn near nothing. And vitamin K in our blood is involved in blood clotting, so it allows our blood to clot. So deficiencies in vitamin K can lead to hemorrhaging. And this is why, like, people on warfarin, which is a blood thinning drug, are told to limit their vitamin K intake, because that's what warfarin's trying to prevent it doing. It doesn't want your blood to clot. Think about after a heart attack, they want your blood to be real thin. And I don't think warfarin's used that much anymore. It's kind of like an old school drug, but if it is, you know, they tell them to limit their vitamin K. And just a side note on warfarin. Warfarin is straight up used to kill rats. And it does this through vitamin K deficiency. So they lose blood through hemorrhaging. Just saying. You know what I mean? That's one of the medicines we give people. And we use it to kill rats.
So they just bleed out?
They just bleed out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So not the best, but hey, whatever.
So your dietary sources for K2... this is per tablespoon. For butter and ghee, it's 1 microgram each. Tallow and coconut oil have very little. And then avocado and olive oil have K1, but no K2. So I didn't even list the amount because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're not worried about it. Yeah. Those are the vitamins and minerals, or the vitamins in fats. But there's also another aspect of fats that we want to look into.
So we've talked about these probably in damn near every podcast, the omega-3s and omega-6s. We're just kind of brush over it because I'm sure you've heard us talk about them all the time. So omega-3s are essential fatty acid. That means they must come through your diet. Omega-3s are anti-inflammatory. So the usable forms are DHA and EPA, and those only come from animal sources. Plant sources contain ALA, and they get converted for about like 5 to 10% depending on the factors, and it also depends on if it's getting converted to DHA or EPA. So, like, the benefits of having, like, a high omega-3 content in your diet is, like, reduced depression, better joint health, It's good for your eyes, helps prevent heart disease. It's crucial for your brain health. The list goes on and on and on, and we're still discovering more and more great things about omega-3s. So per tablespoon, ghee is the highest at 0.2 grams. Tallow, lard, and butter all come at 0.1 grams. And then avocado oil, coconut oil, and olive oil are all at zero. And there actually is a slight amount in those, but once you can do the conversion, it's pretty much zero.
Yeah, it's not worth anything. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't feel like listing 10 decimal points to get to the actual amount.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's just call it zero.
Yeah. No, these omega-3 fats are so important, and also omega-6 fats as well. I know omega-6 fats get damned a lot as far as being pro-inflammatory, but they're essential as well. But they're super important in our brain. And shit, I should have wrote this down now that I think about it. But I'm pretty sure 2/3 of our brain's weight, just dry weight, is actually these omega-3 and omega-6 fats. Like, this is the primary source of where they're located in our bodies and our brain. And the reason is these fats are very unstable. And again, not to go into it too deeply, but that's a bad thing when it comes to cooking. But it's a great thing when it comes to our brain having to do things fast. So if you think of, like, a thought or an idea, or you want to move your finger, you think in your brain to move your finger, and how long does it take to move your finger? Blink of an eye, right? It's very fast. But in that entire time, our brain generated an electrical signal down an axon to these synapse, and these vesicles released these neurotransmitters into the synaptic cleft, and that passed the signal onto the next axon. So these vesicles that contain the neurotransmitters are made of polyunsaturated fats, because the body can change them super quickly and push them out in the body. They can break down the cell and then recreate it super fast. If our body used saturated fats or monounsaturated fats to carry those neurotransmitters, it wouldn't happen that fast. So that's why our body actually uses this super highly unstable fat to its benefit, because it can create them and destroy them super fast because they're so unstable. So just a little background on why there's so much omega-6 and omega-3 in our brain.
All right, so now this is probably the first time we're actually going to talk about the benefits of omega-6 fatty acids. I know we bashed them a ton in a couple of the last podcasts.
They're easy to bash.
Well, they're easy to bash because the sources that we get them from are the wrong sources, and we have them at an unreasonable amount.
Yeah, way too much.
I mean, like, the typical American diet has them from, they're overloading, like, the ratio 10 to 1 to like 50 to 1, somewhere around there. Like, it's a crazy amount.
It is.
You really want your omega-3 to omega-6 ratio to be 1 to 1 to like 1 to 4, somewhere around there. There's still like emerging science coming out on that. But as long as you're not like 10 to 1 or like 30 to 1, like, yeah, get as close to 1 to 1 as possible. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard to do when you pair it with the right, like, natural food sources. It'll get pretty close to that.
Yeah, it will.
So omega-6 fatty acids, they're another essential fatty acid. Those are pro-inflammatory. So inflammation chronically is a bad thing. That's like arthritis, you know, just you're going to be feeling pain all the time. Pretty much every chronic disease is some sort of inflammation chronically. So you don't want that to be happening all the time. But if you get a cut on your arm, or you just had a tough workout and you have like a lot of muscle soreness, or you break your arm, you want inflammation in those cases. But those are acute cases. I mean, they only last a short period of time. You do want inflammation in those cases. So, like, you do want omega-6s. You don't want to just have a shit ton of omega-3s and no omega-6s in your diet. You wouldn't be healing properly. You'd be prone to illness because you wouldn't have anything to like fight infections. So, like, they are necessary. Just the ratio that we consume them at is completely unnatural.
Completely out of whack, yeah. No, there is, like, right now, I'm, like I've said a million times, I'm still kind of dieting, and it's imperative when you're calorie reduced and you're trying to cut down to keep pushing yourself in the gym. And that's so hard to do when you have low energy, but you have to tell your body, you have to give your body the signal that what you currently is working with is not adequate. Like, you have to keep building. So I'm actually sore as shit right now because I'm trying to push myself hard in the gym and also cut calories and just eat these meals that aren't really, I'm like barely getting by, you know? But there's a supplement, a bodybuilding supplement called arachidonic acid, and you can buy it just online. You can Google it. all that is an omega 6 fat. That's all it is. And they promote that as to help like recover, because you give your body this fat and then it creates those prostaglandins in the muscle cell and tells our body to repair these muscle cells. So, you know, promotes overall healing and recovery from a workout. And do I think it's pointless to buy arachidonic acid? Sure, because we're swimming in this shit anyways. So, I mean, I don't recommend go buying it. I recommend just eating a steak. But that is the benefit of omega-6. It tells our body where to recover and how to recover from these just traumas throughout the day.
So if the food sources for omega-6, this is again per tablespoon. Avocado oil is the highest, 1.7 grams per tablespoon. So just to go over like the fats, like the omega-3s, were 0.2, 0.1 were the highest. So again, like even these natural sources are extremely higher in omega-6s. Avocado oil is 1.7 to 0. Olive oil is 1.3 to 0. Lard is 1.3 to 0.1. Butter is one of the better ratios at 0.4 to 0.1. So there you go, that 4 to 1 ratio. Tallow is 0.4 to 0.1. Again, 4 to 1 ratio. Ghee is 0.3 to 0.2. That's the best ratio. And then coconut oil is 0.2 to 0.0. So, you know, like the butter, tallow, ghee, lard. Well, actually, butter, tallow, ghee all fit in perfectly with that ratio where you want it to be.
Yep. And this is actually one of the reasons, if you go to our website, you'll see on the carnivore diet, I always recommend having a ruminant-based diet. So I want beef or sheep camel, deers, whatever, to make up the bulk of your diet, is because their omega-3 to omega-6 ratio is great. It's awesome. And not to say that lard is bad, because it's not, but it is higher. And so is chicken. Chicken's even higher than lard. So it's just, it's something to be aware of, you know, especially when you're trying to heal, especially when you're just starting these dietary changes, just try and go for the best possible stuff. And like tallow has a great omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. And actually, I mean, side note, McDonald's and all these restaurants before saturated fat got damned, they actually used to cook like their French fries in beef tallow.
So it's funny you bring that up. When we were out this weekend, we went to this, like, it was like a small bar in like downtown Lodi. And so we just went in there. They were still cooking food. One of my girlfriend's friends is like a vegan, and they have, it's really weird, is they have a lot of like carnivore type stuff. They have like a lot of sausages, but then they have a lot of stuff geared towards vegans. You know what they cook their French fries in? Tallow.
Oh, do they?
And I was just like,
that's cool.
When she said that, because like the girl mentioned she was a vegetarian, uh-huh. She's like, oh, hey, what can I like order from here? And she's like, oh, you can't order the French fries because of this. And I was like, why do you cook it in tallow? Uh-huh. And she's like, oh, well, the hydrogenated oils are all bad for you. And this kind of went into that. And I was just like, that's interesting. And I was like, personally, from a business standpoint, I would use coconut oil so I could still sell that shit to her. But
yeah,
I just said that in my head, but I was like, oh, that's nice. I mean, that's not healthy. You're cooking a high carbohydrate food with a fat.
Yeah, but it's way better than,
I mean, it's the healthiest way to do
something. It's the healthiest way to do it, yeah. That's cool. I really appreciate, that's cool. I like that they do that.
I thought that was interesting, but I was like, from a business standpoint, I don't know if that makes the most sense.
I bet it tastes better, though. It has to taste better.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Yeah. I think she said that they taste better, too.
Yeah,
I bet. I don't really remember that. I just remember, I was like, it's kind of like,
Who told, the waitress told you that?
Well, she was a bartender, I don't know, it was like a bar / like restaurant. They were still serving food.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Hey, she doesn't know, but she knows more about this shit than the vast majority of people.
Well, she was
talking about trans fats and all that type of stuff.
She was all on board with my friend being like a vegan. She's like, oh, hey, this is what you can order, this is what you can order. Just don't order this because you could get in beef fat. And I was like, kind of like a light bulb went off, like, mm-hmm. Why do you do that? Mm-hmm. I was wondering what she was going to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I completely understand her reasoning, just mm-hmm. kind of surprised that you would. The one thing that's almost universally vegan friendly is not vegan friendly at a restaurant that has many vegan friendly restaurants.
Yeah, maybe meals. Yeah,
it kind of just like stood out because like they have a bunch of sausages and then they have a vegan sausage. They have like avocado toast and a couple other like options. I just remember talking about it because she was like, oh, hey, this would be a good place. Like if we all wanted to go out for like brunch or, you know, go out to eat, uh-huh. like this is a good place that we can
all eat.
Yeah, you know, everybody will be happy.
Yeah. No, that's cool.
So I think that about does it for the Healthy Fat Podcast. Just what fats to cook with, since we already went over which ones to avoid.
Yeah, exactly. So do not fear fat. Fat does not cause heart disease. And if you are going to use fat in your diet, which you should, go for the animal-based sources or just the natural sources. So lard, ghee, butter, tallow, olive oil, coconut oil. You cannot go wrong with those. Just please don't use canola oil. Please don't use soy oil or anything like that. Those are just straight trash and honestly poison.
Yeah, and also don't fall for that high smoking point as a benefit. That's actually a bad thing because they're already damaged. There's no more damage that can be done from the heat because the damage has already been done. So, like, that's why a lot of those do have crazy high smoking points.
Yeah.
Looking this up, like, avocado oil was, like, the best cooking oil because it has such a crazy high smoking point. And then when I actually researched it, like, it took a while. Like, trying to find out why.
So high.
What's the good thing about it? Because nobody wants to bash avocado oil.
No, that's like the darling child.
The keto community loves it. The vegan community loves it. Like, it's hard to find enemies of avocado
oil. Yeah, avocado's killing it right now.
Yeah, so, like, I had to search through pages, and then I finally realized, like, oh, yeah, it's already been... They removed a lot of the antioxidants, and, like, a lot of the stuff's already been oxidized. So there's really... Cook it to 500 degrees. What are you going to do? It's already been done.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's cool, man. That's actually, it's a really good little deep dive you did. So, do you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably trying to optimize your life. Everybody's trying to look for little improvements here or there. So, one thing that's easier than actually trying to change yourself is just to change your environment. So, think about, like, hey, if you're trying to eat healthier, you know what's the easiest way to eat healthier? Get rid of all that junk food in your house. Like, hey, if you're trying to quit cigarettes, if you go to somewhere where there's no cigarettes, you're going to be forced to quit smoking because it's just not an option. And then, like, if you also try to work out more, just make working out easier. Have your workout clothes bundled already together. You have your gym shorts, your shirt, your underwear, your gym socks, your gym shoes in a nice little pile by the front door as a nice little reminder to, hey, bring these with you or put these on. Just put them somewhere like that. My running shoes are always by the front door just so, like, hey, wear these. You spent a lot of money on them, you know, break them in, get your money's worth out of it. And then you have your gym set in your living room. When I have my weights,
literally,
when I have my weights in my living room, like, you know, I'm not always going to get a full workout in, but if I'm just sitting there watching TV and then I get to see the dumbbells out of my corner of my eye, I'm like, you know what? Instead of just sitting here watching TV, like, I could be doing something. So I'm, like, more active or more likely just to get some little activity while I'm just sitting around doing nothing already. And I'm like, if I have my pull-up bar, like, up in my door stand, it's hard for me to walk past that without just busting out, like, five real quick.
Yep.
Like, I felt like I'm about to do a full-on workout, but just having these nice little reminders, having my house just more environmentally friendly towards exercise just makes it so much easier to get a lot more activity in than I normally wouldn't do it. So instead of just trying to, like, focus in on changing your motivation, trying to change yourself. Changing yourself is hard. Nobody wants to change.
It is hard.
Like, no matter how much you want to eat healthier, like, it's easier just to change your environment. Get rid of that junk food. Replace your junk food with healthy foods. Get all that temptation stuff out of the way and replace it with good things. You know, if you're reminded to eat healthy all the time, you're much more likely to eat healthy. And if you don't have those temptations around, how are you going to do it? Like, if I'm craving a Snickers bar and there's none in my fridge, you know, like, that craving's got to be really damn strong for me to get in my car, drive to the store, get out of my car, walk into the store, stand in line, and, like, pay for it, and then walk out. Yep. Like, that's got to be a crazy strong craving for it to last, like, 20, 30 minutes and for me to put in all that effort.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a great point. That's why we tell people to remove tempting foods from the environment. Like, it's super important to do that. And actually, funny story. So I do all the like shopping for my household, all the grocery shopping. And obviously, I don't buy any bad shit. So there's no tempting food in my house at all. And my wife's on board with this diet like 90% of the time. But every once in a while, she'll want a cake pop from Starbucks, right? Never had a cake pop in my life. Apparently, they're good. I don't know. But there's literally a Starbucks 2 minutes from our house. Actually, I think there's a Starbucks 2 minutes from everybody's house. And so every once in a while when she's like, yo, I don't care about your dumb meal plans. I don't give a shit that meat's good for you. I'm going to go get a cake pop. She has to get up and drive to Starbucks.
No, I mean, hey, if that's the way you're going to do it, good. That means you really want it.
That's when you really want it, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
I say go ahead.
I mean, she had a box of them in the fridge. She would probably go to one even if she didn't want one.
Impulse.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
K-pops are delicious.
Are they? They look good.
My girlfriend's, I think it's her sister-in-law, she, like, makes them for Christmas every year. And it's just me and my girlfriend. She gives us, like, a big-ass box of cookies and all this stuff. And it's like, I don't want this.
But you're going to eat it.
Yeah, but, like, I'll eat, like, 7 K-pops in a row. It's not like those are filling. Like, they have no nutritional value, so it's not like they're, you know, doing anything other than giving me a sugar spike.
Yeah, your brain's not telling you to stop ever.
Yeah.
And just, so like, keep going. No, that's funny. Well, all right. Well, that's another episode in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. And I guess just a little plug here. I recently updated the whole website. So it's kind of like website 2.0 or shit, maybe 3.0. I've changed the website so many times now. And so to celebrate that, all through June, we're having 20% off all our coaching. So if that does interest you, or if, you know, you just want to get things optimized, now's a good time to do it. You know, check out the website. Again, that's TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. And, yeah, any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition@gmail.com. And, yeah, feel free to reach out.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe both on our website and to the podcast. You can find us on Apple iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.